Oh, great news, everyone!
Talk radio the way the founding fathers would have done it.
I'm just a man trying to make his mark on history.
Red State Talk Radio.
Those who would trade our freedom for the soup kitchen of the welfare state have told us they have a utopian solution of peace without victory. They call their policy accommodation. And they say if we'll only avoid any direct confrontation with the enemy, he'll forget his evil ways and learn to love us.
Ask not what your country can do for you. Ask what you can do for your country.
In this present crisis, government is not the solution to our problem. Government is the problem.
Politics, 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 politics.
That's right. It's politics, politics, politics. Welcome and good morning. Happy Friday to all. It is November 4th, 2016. And yes, we are slightly outside the realm of possibility. That's right. We are only days away from having a new president. The Obama administration will come to an end in January 2017, and either Hillary Clinton or Donald Trump will take the reins. And where we go from there, well, that really is truly up to us. Here's the thing, folks. It does not make a bit of difference. It does not make a hill of beans. It's what we do with the election afterwards. It's what the American people will accept. It's what the American people will do. I am not advancing the idea that, oh, I'm going to say Hillary Clinton won and I'm just going to stick my head in the sand and go, oh, woe is me. Or Donald Trump won and go, oh, wow, it's great. We're moving on. No. You and I both know it is up to us to decide the fate of America. It is up to us to decide what we will accept worldwide, what we will advance worldwide, and what we will accomplish worldwide. One step after another. One foot in front of another. Hand in hand, if necessary, side by side with our friends and our cohorts. Whatever it will be, will be. So I want to remind each and every one of you that if you haven't voted, if you haven't forced to have you, pushed to have your voice heard, if you haven't taken the step to put yourself in a position to complain, bitch, and overall simply writhe in agony if necessary, get off your duff, get in your car, get on a boat, get on a plane, take a subway car, take a bus, but get yourself to the polls. And if you haven't done it on early voting, do it on November 8th. Tuesday's around the corner. It is what we need. It's where we're going to be. It's what we have to accomplish. So remember that. That day in history is when you get to say whether or not you participated or you sat on the sidelines and decided whether or not you were going to take your football and go home. Grow up, be a big boy or girl, put on your big boy pants, and do what you need to do. And while we're at it, I just want to remind you that you can find the Warren Markwood Show on Red State Talk Radio, on Spreaker, Podomatic, Blog Talk, and of course, Facebook, Twitter, Google+, and pretty much anywhere else you can find us floating around the web. So, we are going to be right back after this break. Skype will be up and running. You'll be able to join us at Radio Markwood's on the show or send your comments there. And we'll be right back after this. Sit tight. Thank you very much. I'll be back in a minute. Hi, I'm Warren Markwood, host of the Warren Markwood Show. Catch me every Tuesday and Friday at 10:30 a.m. Pacific Time on Spreaker.com to talk about politics, economics, and anything else that just might tickle my fancy.
Do you take Viagra? Are you tired of overpaying for your pills? What if you could get the exact same results for just a fraction of the price, guaranteed? Well, now you can with Sildenafil, the active ingredient in Viagra. With 20 milligram generic sildenafil tablets, you get the exact same results of Viagra for less than $2 per pill. And again, the results are guaranteed. That's right, absolutely guaranteed results for a fraction of the cost of Viagra. So give your wallet a break and call us toll-free at 800-217-0599 to get your generic sildenafil delivered discreetly to your door. And of course, while saving hundreds of dollars, you'll also be saving time by saying goodbye to those long, embarrassing pharmacy lines once and for all. Again, just call 800-217-0599 and get your generic Sildenafil with a 100% money-back guarantee. Getting your pills doesn't get any easier or cheaper than this. So call 800-217-0599 now.
It's his world. You just live in it. This is the Warren Markowitz Show.
And this is your host, Warren Markowitz. Okay, so let's look at this. Theme of the show today is, where do we go from here? Well, what do we got? Think about all the headaches we're dealing with. Think about the problems that we're faced with. Think about what the politicians claim they can solve. And let's recognize one very important little factor. They can't solve a revolving door. They can't get themselves out of their own problems. They cannot do a damn thing without you or I. You know, I've got some serious issues about Congress. I got some serious problems about the White House. I got some serious problems about the judiciary. But if we don't stand up and speak our minds and take the actions necessary to change our government, then what are we going to be left with? We're going to be left with the same thing as we had before. You know, a wise man once said, if you never let go of what you have today, then all you will ever have tomorrow is what you got today. So if you're disappointed in your congressman, if you're disappointed in your senator, if you're disappointed in your president, if you're disappointed in your presidential politics or policies, if you're disappointed in anything in which your voice is asked to be heard and you choose not to do anything, you have no one to blame but yourself. I mean, let's look economically at things, all right? They say that wages are up. They say that jobless claims are down. They say that jobless claims are down is they're inferring that more people are working. We still have almost 50% of the population either out of the workforce or on some sort of governmental supplies. We have 47 plus million people in welfare. That's money you and I spend to keep people from slipping. Well, how do you be blunt about it? To avoid stepping over the impoverished on the streets. And yet, you still see people on the street corner every day with signs, "We'll work for food, unemployed, there's a major disaster that occurred," etc., etc., etc. Now, mind you, I don't think anybody listening to this show or anybody that I have ever spoken to advocates the idea that we should just simply let people die miserably on the streets. This isn't a third world country. There is a safety net. Even the founding fathers thought of the idea of a safety net in order to be able to establish some sort of semblance and stability in society. But what happens when that safety net becomes more dependent upon those that are producing? The imbalance is dangerous. And in my opinion, we're quickly approaching that point of the imbalance in which economically half of us can't keep us going. It's not about whether or not they could tax us more and distribute more, because God knows that any politician who decides to try and at least have a small piece of the pie will continue to do that. It's about whether or not we can find a way to put those people that are dependent in a position to be non-dependent. We've tried work programs. We've tried, workfare was one program. There's job retraining programs. It comes down to a little bit more than that. It doesn't come down to It doesn't come down to a $15 an hour job flipping burgers or dumping fries in a fryer at McDonald's or any of those other places. All you succeed in doing is making the economics of running a business nearly impossible in some areas where, by the way, profit margins, whether you like it or not, are razor thin. And I'm talking 5% or less. And that's what you have to run the business on. Forget about the costs. That's what you have to run the business on up and beyond the costs. And that's where your taxes come out of. And that's where we have our problems. For small business people, of course. Because if you've never run a business, you don't realize that there's payroll taxes. There's city taxes, there's local taxes, there's sales taxes, which you have to collect, but you don't get to keep. They don't belong to you. There is unemployment taxes. There must be a dozen different taxes that a small business person pays. And if you raise the cost of the employee arbitrarily, then what you're doing is you're also raising the tax burden. And I'll tell you right now, I don't think anybody there will disagree with me. You don't get into business to go broke. You don't risk your time, money, and effort to collapse a business, to create more obligations that you can't pay. You go into business so that you can put food on your table and a roof over your head and take care of your kids and possibly take care of other people through employment. So how do we deal with 130 million people, which, by the way, is basically the size of 4 or 5 mid-sized European countries, or, for reference sake, about the size of the population of Russia? How do we figure out how to get them back to work? How do we figure out how to get them independent? By creating more dependence? By funneling more money to them for disposal and use of their use? You see, one of the biggest problems I've got with one of the candidates is that this particular candidate decides that we're going to try and take care of these people more. The issue isn't about taking care of them. All right, let's take a pause for a second. There are some people that are incapable of working. They're physically incapable of working, mentally incapable of working, or whatnot. There are some people that are incapable of working because they don't have the skills. They don't have the wherewithal. They may need the child care to take care of their kids while they go to work. Those are people that we can work issues around. I'm talking about the ones that have been gaming the system. We don't make welfare profitable. You don't make government subsidies profitable. Whether it's a government contractor or it's a government, whether it's a government contractor or it's a government handout, you don't make it profitable for somebody to enjoy it, because then they don't turn around and take care of themselves. Think about your friends or any of your friends that have ever been unemployed. As it comes down to the last couple of weeks or last month or two of unemployment insurance, and they know it's going to run out, all of a sudden they get themselves on their feet and they start looking for a job and start trying to recreate something. That's what we lost when we pushed unemployment insurance to 99 weeks, which, by the way, in my opinion, wasn't 99 weeks. It was welfare for nearly 2 years. It was a government handout. That we turned around and made private industry pay for after, well, we thought it was a good idea from our government. You see, where we go from here when it comes to the economics of this country is fairly simple. We need to find ways to put people back to work. And the only way to put people back to work is to create places in which these people can work. And the only way we can do that is to make sure that it is profitable to compete in an open environment. You see, a lot of the plans they have that we're facing now, a lot of the trade partnerships, treaties, and so forth, make it economically feasible to ship jobs overseas, to manufacture something somewhere else and bring it back here for purchase. It's simple numbers, folks. If you walk into a store and you have 6 washing machines that you need to, and you need to buy one, you buy one that provides you the services you need in terms of its features and techniques. You buy it if you can afford it. And you buy it based upon what, how you're going to pay for it, whether you're going to pay for it on time or pay for it in cash. It doesn't make a difference if it's built in the United States in most places. We don't even think about that anymore. But in order to have a competitive edge, we are up against companies that manufacture goods in parts of the world where people may be paying $3 an hour or even $3 a week in terms of equitable compensation. So when we have to deal with those things, maybe we do need to bring back tariffs. Maybe we do need to restrict goods from foreign companies. Maybe, just maybe, we need to do those things to protect our workers. Will that reduce economic growth throughout the world? Probably. But is that our concern overall? You know, America's considered the engine that drives the world. But if we're just buying things and depreciating our currency in order to do that, because we just simply have to keep creating more money to chase more goods, we wind up with more goods that are more expensive. By the way, that's called inflation. When you've got more money chasing less goods, maybe we have to increase the value of our currency. We have to reduce the amount that's out there, create the stability to draw investment here in the United States. It's not about world partnerships, folks. It's not about making it better for somebody in China or in Pakistan or in India or in the islands where they manufacture goods or clothes or whatnot. It's about a strong America to be able to drive this truck, this economic train. Heaven knows that China can't keep up, can't keep producing its goods if there's nobody to buy them. It's what we boil down to in terms of what are we going to do here in the States? Remember, we've got almost 130 plus million people that are either chronically unemployed or dependent upon government. Even if we take 20% of that, which is 26 million people, and we put everybody else back to work, even if it's unreasonable, and we go down to 50 million people, there's 80 million plus potential people that can be part of the workforce, advancing themselves, advancing the United States, advancing the economics of a stable society. Because a society remains stable when people have something to lose. Think of this. When all you've got, and I'll give you an example. Let's take a real example. Whether or not you appreciate, respect, understand, like the idea of the standoff in April of 2014 between the people over at Bundy Ranch and the federal government, represented by, I think it was the Park Service and the Forestry Service and Department of the Interior, multiple groups, and the Bureau of Land Management. I don't have a problem with those groups, by the way, just so you know. I don't have an issue with those agencies doing an effective job, doing a representative job. But the issue is fairly simple, and I'm trying to point out. You had people that were protesting on one side, and you had the government officials on the other side. Now, regardless of what you've heard or what you think you know or whatnot, all I'm saying is this. You didn't hear about people burning cars, torching businesses, throwing things around, or harming police officers. Didn't happen. The news would have been all over it if it had happened. Now go to Ferguson. What happened in Ferguson when a kid got caught? And I'll say this politely. A kid got shot by a cop, even though that kid was big enough to break the cop in two and beat him to death with his bare hands. What happened after that? The burning, the pillaging, the overall ransacking of the businesses and the neighborhoods. Why? Think of it. The people in Nevada had something to lose. They had their freedoms to lose. They had their reputations to lose. They had their homes, their businesses, their interests. There was something there of value that they wished to protect. And they raised a voice and they protested. Okay. Ferguson. Who burned down the businesses? Who torched the cars? Who attacked police officers? Who caused harm and wreaked havoc? those who didn't have anything to lose. Revolutions are not caused by people that have something to lose. They are caused by people who have nothing to lose. And with 130 million plus people either dependent upon the government or chronically unemployed and unable to be and find support in any place else, we are quickly getting to the point in which those of us who have something to lose are realizing we have nothing to lose. Because if you're constantly sharing every dollar you earn with somebody else, after a while you look at yourself and say, why bother? You look and say, I can do just as well if I simply sat home and collected a check and became a fat bastard on the couch. You know, economically, we have to recognize that you cannot have such a small group of people supporting such a large group of people. Technically, I think that we called that slavery, but that was back in the 19th century. That didn't end too well either. But you see where I'm going with this? It is our obligation as Americans, as business people, as entrepreneurs, as those who recognize the fact that while God created everybody equally, made men, men, women, women, etc., etc., our equality starts and finishes at the starting line. How we finish it, how we end that race, the opportunity starts at the starting line. No one should start at an advantage. No one should start ahead. It's the starting line. It's where we all begin. And when it comes to simple economics, if I'm earning my living and I'm earning my way, somebody who takes from me should not turn around and say, you don't pay your fair share. The rich don't pay enough. Well, it's the one stealing that says you've got too much. It's the one taking that says it's not fair, you've got more than I. Well, if that's the case, why bother? Why produce? Why not just pick up and leave? And just so that you recognize a simple fact, there have been a substantial amount of people who have great wealth and great advantage and great technology that they've created who have picked up and left the United States and relinquished their society, their citizenship for that particular reason. That the idea of America, that you can succeed and enjoy what you produced, is being taken away from us for the benefit of those who don't contribute. That's a society on a downstroke. That's a society in which, if we don't get a hold of this problem, in 10 years or 20 years, we may not even have to worry about it. The idea of America being a free and open society may simply cease under its own weight. The Soviet Union failed after roughly 90 years or 80 years based upon its inability to actually fulfill its goals. The ideas and concepts just simply drifted away. And it collapsed because you cannot give to those who do not contribute. Think about this. Tomorrow is a new day. It's a promise to us. And if we blow it, well, that's our fault. We'll be right back after this. This program is brought to you by the Law Office of Warren R. Markowitz, Esquire. Attorney Markowitz, that's me, is licensed in New York, the U.S. District Court and Bankruptcy Courts in Colorado, and the 9th and 10th Circuit Courts of Appeal. For more information or to see if I can help you with your case, please contact me at info@MarkowitzLawFirm.com. That's MarkowitzLawFirm.com. Warren Markowitz Esquire, a modern lawyer for modern times. Cryptocurrency and traditional forms of payment accepted.
Red State Talk Radio.
The Talk Monster.
Mostly Mail, your local provider for all your postal packaging and mailing needs. Owned and operated by your neighbors, Mostly Mail provides the packaging and mailing services you need when dealing with all your holiday shipping. Visit Bill and the Boys at 7260 West Azure Drive, Las Vegas, Nevada, 89130, or give them a call at 702-294-6245. That's 702-294-6245 for more information. Mostly Mail, your local provider for postal packaging and mailing needs. They keep me connected. They can keep you connected. Stop on in and tell them Warren sent you. Okay, now, enough with the down in the dumpster stuff about economics. We can move on to some more interesting things. How about all this headache right now? For those of you who haven't been paying attention, it seems to be some sort of a concern about a possible Al-Qaeda interference with the election. Well, just so you know where I'm finding this and poking around here, it was in the Google News feed earlier today about a possible threat to New York, Virginia, and somewhere else regarding the election. But here's the thing. How do we deal with an ism? That's right. How do we deal with the idea of an ism as our problem? Now, I'm not saying that Hillary's going to make it better or that Donald's going to make it better or that, you know, Gary Johnson or Jill Stein or Daryl Castle is going to make it better. But how do we deal with an ism? Because that's what we're fighting. We're fighting terrorism, you know, because we're afraid of terror. Well, last time I checked, a lot of us pay good money to go to horror movies because we like to be terrorized. We like to feel the adrenaline pump. We're dealing with religious terror, political terror. Those are different things. Those are ideas that want to advance goals that do not necessarily fit within the confines of our lives. And what we have to deal with and we have to recognize is that we got to stop worrying about offending people. Let me explain something to you. In the 1950s, the 1960s, the 1970s, even in the 1980s, when Muslims came from the Middle East and they came from places like Pakistan and Iran and Afghanistan and Iran and Iraq and they came to the United States, they didn't come to blow us up. They didn't come to destroy our way of life. They didn't come to be here. I am not an apologist, by the way, so don't even accuse me of this. They came for the American ideal, the American dream. They came to make a life better for themselves and their families, and many people did. I am not, by the way, going to agree with President Obama, who says that Muslims can help contribute to the foundation of this country. Unless, of course, you're going to go back to the foundation of the American military and the Marine Corps. And the idea and the concept of a leather neck or a devil dog. Because if it wasn't for the Barbary Pirates, I don't know if the Marines would have those titles. And that is early 19th century, like 1801. We're talking about contributions to American society and dealing with the differences today. Somewhere between those periods in time, between the advancement of radical Islam, and yes, Islam itself is a radical religion. It's a radical political and religious ideology. It is wrapped up, it is a political foundation of conquest and submission, wrapped up in a religious idea and a religious concept in order to be able to control its participants. You don't like my conclusion? Find somebody else to talk to. If you understand what I have to say, well, then you know what? Let's continue. Those early people who came escaping the Shah, who came escaping the Iranian Revolution of 1979 and that period within, they came here for a purpose. And it wasn't, in my opinion, wasn't to develop a fifth column. It was to develop a better life for their families. Just look at, there was an article today about, it was involving the girl on the National Geographic cover from 1984. Again, it was on Google News this morning, and it was about how she's being deported from Pakistan. She was an Afghan woman with the green eyes. It was on the cover of National Geographic. I don't know what she looks like today, but last time I saw a picture, the woman was a little weathered after being, you know, tossed around for 30-something years and having society completely implode underneath her. Because those countries became westernized. Those countries had Western ideals where the advancement of an individual was just as important as the advancement of religion. Now, you know, some people have been offended by the simple fact that Christianity fought crusades, and Christianity went through a reformation, and Christianity went through... It is what it is. The history shows that Christianity went through a reformation. It changed its positions. It also recognized the fact that we had the Inquisition, which was a radicalization of Christianity through the Roman Catholic Church to advance Christianity. But we left those things behind 600-700 years ago. We've grown up as a society as a whole. Today we're fighting a group of radicalized ideals that doesn't see a way out. It's to our best interest. It's in our best interest that we recognize the fact that we're not knocking a billion plus people. We're identifying a problem, and the problem happens to be those billion plus people generally agree that Sharia law should be the law, and that it's okay to kill non-believers, and it's okay to do all these things because that's what their holy book says. If their holy book doesn't agree with or fit within the confines of a civilized society, it should not be accepted. But that's the difference between a civilized society and an uncivilized society. Because in a civilized society, you can pick and choose what you accept as legitimate teachings. You can't pick and choose the simple fact that strapping bombs to people and walking them into a wedding or walking into a funeral or walking into a mall is unacceptable. And that just murdering yourself is not a gateway to heaven. It's a gateway to self-destruction. I don't care what you do it for. You're not fighting a war against non-believers. And even if you were fighting a war against non-believers, why would you waste your life like that? Why would you deal with something like that? You see, over the last 10 or 15 years, maybe 20 years, America has quickly slipped from taking a stand against things that are evil and wrong to acceptance. We fought the evil empire. We fought the Soviets, the communists, the evil communists, the red Chinese in Korea, the Soviets everywhere we could possibly find them, even if there were proxy wars. We had a bad guy. We identified the bad guy. We dealt with the bad guy. The bad guy collapsed. Even the bad guy in China collapsed. Because you don't shoot at the people you do business with. It's a realistic situation. But now, if you watch what's going on, if you pay attention to the politics, we're not talking about the overt politics of people that literally want to kill us. We are demonizing people that don't need to be demonized. We are making ourselves fearful of things that we don't need to be afraid of. I don't care what you think or how you think it. The Russians are not our enemies, at least not yet. We're doing a really good job of making them into enemies. There's only 110 million of them. We've got them outnumbered 3-1. If you put a gun in every man, woman, and child's hands, our weapons are better than theirs. Our fleets are larger than theirs. We're more accurate than theirs. We're better equipped. We're better stored. We are better trained. Why would we even concern ourselves with making an enemy out of somebody we'd be better off with a friend? It all goes back to where we put our friends. And when we put our friends into a position, or I should say when we call our people friends that are not necessarily friendly, then we have a substantial issue in our hands. You see, one of our biggest problems is we don't know how to deal with this terrorism thing. We really don't. We think dropping a bomb here or sending some troops over there or just, you know, kind of trying to contain them over this way is a proper way of doing it. No. Turning the entire place into a giant parking lot for Walmart might be the only solid solution. Letting them burn themselves out like a fire would might be a proper solution. Not giving a damn if a man like Bashar Assad is in power in Syria might be part of our solution. Because what America has ignored, what our foreign policy has ignored, that we must retain or, well, reacquire, is that if it's not good for us, then we'll deal with it. If it doesn't matter, then we ignore it. It's that simple. We worry about our own little backyard. We worry about our own little parking lots. We worry about our bushes and our homes and our trees. We worry about the things that make a difference. We worry about our routes. Why do you think you're so worried? Why do you think the military is so worried about the Strait of Hormuz, where a large quantity of the world's oil travels through? Why do you think we worry about whether Iran will close the straits? Because that's where the oil comes from. But here's the thing. America is now an oil exporter again. Do I really care if it's coming from Saudi Arabia? Do I really care if oil, if Europe can get their oil? Do I really care if Japan or any of the other places can get it? Why would I care? Well, it impacts our economy. It all comes back down to the dollars. That's why we care. So why do we care about whether or not Assad's in power in Syria? Because we worry about a proxy war through Syria for Iran? I got a better idea. Those clowns that are trying to overthrow Syria, identify who they are and what their politics are. Because right now we can't do that. And if their politics don't support us, and I don't mean, well, we'll tolerate Americans or we'll yell death to America later. I'm talking about now. If their politics don't support us, don't support them. The Kurds, we keep hearing about this, and we're not talking about the ones from Little Miss Muffet. The Kurds in northern Turkey and Iraq, they've been looking for an independent state, develop an independent state of their own. They have no problem with us. They're not looking to cause death to America. They're not looking to destroy us. They're not looking to bomb us, blow us up, strap bombs to their bodies. They're looking to live unfettered and unharassed because they're considered a religious minority. They're not even part of the group out there that can be justified on who's going to kill them next. It's either the Sunnis or the Shias. It's, you know, either way, they're on a shit end of the stick. So why aren't we supporting them? Because it might offend Turkey? Well, screw Turkey. We've got an Incirlik air base. They want us out. Let them make us come. Let them make us leave. They're the bridge. Turkey's the bridge to Europe from Asia. We'll build another bridge. Remember, modern Turkey came from the collapse of the Ottoman Empire. It grew out of the failure of a caliphate, the failure of a religious-based monarchy. That's what this clown in ISIS is trying to develop, and yet we don't seem to recognize a simple fact that we're trying to attack an idea. The only way you attack an idea is you either make your idea better, or you completely destroy your opponent. And I don't mean just simply scatter them to the four winds. Because whether you like it or not, you can scatter them to the four winds, but that doesn't mean they're gone. I happen to be a Jew from Western Europe. Actually, from Eastern Europe. That's where my family goes back to. that the Asperaz is referred to was the effect of an expulsion, the tossing of the Jewish people out of Israel by various governments. Didn't work out too well. We're still around. Been kicking for over 5,000 years. That's the difference between the approach that we're taking today and the approach that needs to be, the approach that was taken then and the destructive purpose that we must have today. Because we're not up against a religious group that simply doesn't agree with us. We're up against a religious fanaticism that's out for our general destruction. And until we're willing to accept it, and that I don't care if it's a religion, it's destructive to us as a society and us as a whole, we'll never be able to deal with the problem. Because we'll always be trying to justify it. It's not about all of them. No, it's about the followers of this particular group. It's about the ones who adhere to it this way. You know, there's a lot of issues, including immigration, that we can address with this. And we'll talk to you about it right after this break. Sit tight. Be right back.
Individuals and businesses with tax problems, listen carefully. Do you feel like you're losing control over your finances? If you owe over $10,000 in back taxes or have unfiled tax returns, we can help you take back control. The IRS is the largest and most aggressive collection agency in the world, and they can seize your bank account, garnish your paycheck, close your business, and file criminal charges. Take control of your tax problems now by calling the experts at Tax Mediation Services and take advantage of the Fresh Start program and new laws that may allow us to negotiate a settlement for the lowest amount possible. Our team of tax attorneys and enrolled agents can stop collections and get you protected so you can take control of your financial future. Tax Mediation Services is accredited by the Better Business Bureau. Call now for a free case review and a price protection guaranteed quote.
Call Tax Mediation Services now at 800-605-6818. That's 800-605-6818. 800-605-6818.
Separating the matter from the chatter. This is the Warren Markowitz Show.
The Warren Markowitz Show. It's his world. You just live in it.
And it's my world, and you're back. And I appreciate you spending the last, almost 45 minutes to an hour with me. We're getting down to the last 15 minutes of the segment. And I want to look at some things here. You know, terrorism has been a problem for the last 20-plus years. I'm not pointing fingers at Bush. I'm not pointing fingers at Obama. I'm not pointing fingers at Clinton. You can't point fingers at Trump. The man was never involved with the damn process. But in general, we've got an important date in November 8th. You know, Obama was swept into office on the idea of change. Reagan was swept into office on the concept of whether or not we were better off beforehand than we are now. Even if we accept whether or not the last 8 years has been beneficial, have we really changed the way our government functions, the way our government interacts with us? And has that change been for the better? I, for one, am not of the ilk that says I'm better off than I was 8 years ago. I can point to substantial reasons to say I'm not better off than I was 8 years ago. I can identify economic issues that I've dealt with. And yes, it all boils down to dollars and cents. Because if you think it boils down to less than that, you really have missed the boat. America is about our freedom and our freedom to earn and grow and advance our own desires and ideas through the concept of economics. It's something that didn't exist in Europe and was something that was being wiped out and squashed during the Revolutionary War. And we fought that over pennies, quite literally pennies. The Revolutionary War was fought over things as minuscule as the Stamp Act, the pennies of tax on tea. And yet, you sit back and you turn around and recognize how much money is drawn from the system by government on a daily basis. If the Founding Fathers were here today, They look at us and wonder how we managed to get this far without killing ourselves. Because in the end, it's all about what we get to keep and what we get to enjoy and how we get to move forward. You know, we started this segment talking about economics and people that are dependent upon the government. I, for one, would like to see zero people dependent upon the government. And I'm not talking about people who are collecting Social Security or government pensions because they work for the government. Those people are not dependent on the government in the traditional sense. If you're collecting Social Security, you've got an entitlement program. You're entitled to it. You paid into the system. And if you paid into this system, you're entitled to the benefits of that system. That's a true entitlement. Somebody who didn't pay into the system, who's receiving government benefits, is receiving a handout. That handout is really what bothers me the most. Because it's not the hand up, it's a hand out. A hand up would be the GI Bill. It gives you the opportunity to improve yourself after having served something. A hand up would be the unemployment insurance. It's not necessarily entitlement, but it is a hand up that you get for having worked and contributed now or being unemployed, not for your own making. Handouts are simply ways of us trying to make ourselves feel better. Handouts are ways the government can buy votes. See, I have an issue. I have a major issue. Is that it was even recognized centuries ago when America was founded that the republic would be the republic until the population would recognize they could vote themselves largesse from the treasury. And that is what's happening. We've managed to figure out how to get ourselves more money by keeping the same groups in power. And whether it doesn't matter if it's the Republicans or the Democrats, because, you know, we'll blame the other group next year. We'll blame this group next year. We'll blame that group the year after. It's your turn. It's my turn. It's bullshit. You know, and it is bullshit. Because in the end, all they're doing is figuring out how to take from one person and give it to somebody else. And herein lies the issue. Is that fair? Seriously. If you worked hard enough for an A grade, and somebody said, you know what, you're going to get a B because this one over here has got to get a C. So we're going to give your grade part to them. Is it fair? No, of course it's not fair. It's not fair because you worked for it and they didn't. It's not fair that they're giving it to you. Now, listen, as much as I don't like the idea of paying taxes, I recognize there are things I need to pay taxes for. I need to pay taxes for my military. I need to pay taxes for the operation of my government. I need to pay taxes for the things that I gain a benefit from, my police officers, my firefighters, my road maintenance, and things like that. I get it. Freedom is free, but freedom is not free. There is a cost to a free society, and that's the taxes. The issue I've got is the relocation of those taxes to persons upon whom have not earned the right to get it. The military earns the right to get it because they wear the uniform. We buy ships, we buy planes, we buy boats, we buy rockets and bombs and guns and bullets, etc., etc., etc. I get that. We spend money for something we get a direct benefit from, or an indirect benefit. We spend money towards local governments so they can pay for our police officers, and they can pay to have our roads improved, and they can pay to have the roads shoveled and moved and salted when it snows and the weather goes bad, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. But I don't think anybody is willing to say, okay, I'll give up an extra 10% of my income so you can take care of the family down the street. You know how you take care of the family down the street? You create an environment in which those people can find a job. And we're back to the economics again. We're back to the main difference between the two major parties. Or I should say the two major candidates. Because I don't think the two major parties are actually different. Trump wants to build a wall, everybody says, and he'll make Mexico pay for it. And they laugh at him. You know what? Mexico may not pay the entire amount for the wall, but they can sure as hell pay a good portion of it. When illegals come to this country and they send money back to other places, that money is drained from our economy. That money is not, oh, they're paying taxes indirectly, they're paying this indirectly, they're paying for consumption taxes and sales taxes and all the other stuff. No, when most of that money leaves the United States, they are not contributing to the economic growth of this country. They are not creating an indirect benefit of being here. As a matter of fact, they're hurting the very people we're trying to protect and those that get abused, because I got news for you. The American black population. Yes, I said it. The blacks, not the African Americans, but the blacks, the inner cities, the people who complain that the man keeps them down. You want to know something? For the most part, they're right. When you allow people to come in and steal jobs, they're not stealing it from the middle class Americans. It's not whether they're black or white or purple or orange or green. They're stealing it from the people that actually need those jobs, that actually need the ability to get themselves up, to bootstrap themselves, to pick themselves up off their asses and make their lives better, whether or not they have to work 40 hours a week or 60. When I was a kid, my dad worked 3 jobs. I remember one of the biggest things that occurred in my life that I remember was when I asked my father, when will I see him next? Because he'd been working so damn much, I don't even remember the last time he was home. Those people are the ones that need what illegals take from them. Illegals take the opportunities that are deserved by Americans. You want to come to this country, knock on the front door, fill out the papers, pay your fee, and wait in line. Don't jump the Rio Grande. Don't sneak across the Canadian border. Don't overstay your visa. Don't travel in through the numerous international ports of call, known as the airports, and just stick around. America is welcoming arms. America brings people here, and they come, and they are welcome to participate. They're welcome to enjoy themselves. But in general, when you open the doors and say, okay, I'll grant 11 million people amnesty or 20 million people amnesty, all you're doing is buying votes, because you're not buying contributions. You're not buying a benefit. Black America has been beaten down, abused, and basically ignored by the very people that claim to support them. The Great Society of the 1960s, the idea that a welfare state could be created in the United States, has done nothing but create a secondary class of people who are dependent upon government. You know, Cliven Bundy is a cranky old coot. He's a simple man. I've met him several times. He's not a bad guy. He's an interesting fellow. He really is. And he's not as poorly educated as you would think, just by the pictures you've seen and the comments and clips you've got. But he made a comment that people are making into a political baseball bat to be swung at a whole lot of people. And that was maybe the blacks are better off. And actually, he used the term Negroes because that's what he was brought up with and that's what he was taught. And I don't hold it against the man. Maybe they were better off picking cotton and living on a plantation. We've just changed the structure of the plantation. When the majority of people that are on government subsidies and handouts are black, we have in effect created a secondary slave society that is dependent upon America for its sustenance. And that's why they riot and scream when their lives are turned upside down, because they have nothing to lose. America is a dream and it's an idea. It's an ideal. And if we don't recognize that we come first as a whole, and those who come here to visit are welcome, but those who come here to visit and overstay their welcome are not, well, the only people who get hurt are us. So on November 8th, remember something. You can keep the same old policies, or you can vote for change, or you can bury your head in the sand. But remember, where we go from here, and will we get what we deserve, all through our own actions. I'm Warren Markowitz. This is the Politically Incorrect on the Warren Markowitz Show. Thanks for joining me. I'll catch you again in a couple of days. Be good.
Mr. Speaker, get me a doctor.
The voice of American conservatism. WRS Digital. Red State Talk Radio.
The Warren Markowitz Show. If you're thinking about it, we're probably talking about it.
The voice of American conservatism. WRS Digital. Red State Talk Radio.
The Warren Markowitz Show.
The Warren Markowitz Show.
On Spreaker, Automatic, and Red State Radio.